This next podcast is our chat with Daniel Bath, who set up Music for the Many. You've already talked to Pip about that, haven't you?
Yes, we've spoken to Pip Fowler about Music for the Many, but Daniel actually sort of set it up in conversation with other musicians and his wife.
Yeah,
as he said, for one said, what a good idea.
I was going to say that made him think, oh, well, maybe it is.
Yeah, it's a great service. It makes music accessible, playing of music accessible to children, mostly in Todmorden.
Yeah,
accessibility fits with the general culture of Todmorden, with like things like
Incredible edible.
Yes,
couldn't think of it, could you?
Yeah.
And it's not just providing instruments, which they do.
Mm.
It's also providing teaching and getting them together to play in orchestras, which is an amazing thing to do.
It's a great service. He also talks about bands he's in, but he's not much when it comes to self-promotion, is he?
No. He is quite modest, isn't
he? He is. He seemed embarrassed that the jazz trio he's in is called the Daniel Bath Trio.
Yeah, but it is.
But for such a modest man, he's done amazing things. In 2020, the then mayor of Todmorden, Ruth Coleman, presented him with an Outstanding Citizenship Award.
Well deserved.
Much deserved it is too. Came to our house, spoke about Music of the Many and the band he's in. Then he went on to talk about Lucy Illingworth.
Which, yeah, is absolutely amazing.
And we thought that would make an episode in itself. So this is part one of Daniel Bath. Yeah. Right, so here we are in our kitchen.
Once again.
With the cat on the table.
Yeah, sorry.
Right. With Daniel Bath. Hello, Daniel.
Hello, Dave.
Hi. So we mainly want to talk to you about Music for the Many.
Yeah.
But also, you know, there's a few other things will crop up.
Tail going.
Keep the cat's tail out of the coffee.
Tail in the coffee.
Yes.
most people like that, don't they?
Music for the Many. It is Todmorden based. You were involved in setting it up, or you set it up? I'm not quite sure.
Well,
right terminology.
Yeah, well, the origins of it is anyone who comes to our events has probably heard the story several times, which is that towards the end of 2017, I'd been to several meetings with other music teachers and tended to be everyone sort of bemoaning the fact that music education is in such a terrible state and there's no funding and there's fewer and fewer children being able to access music education, and the knock-on is that no one's doing GCSE music, no one's doing A-level, the degree courses can't survive, and then there's not going to be any players for the orchestras and so on, you know, and all because at the early level children couldn't access music opportunities, and it was so negative. And one day I was sitting in our kitchen, I was doing the washing up, and the idea came to me, because I'd been thinking about this a lot, you know, how, you know, what can we do actually positive. I said, well, let's just give the children the opportunities instead of, you know, complain about it. It was one of those things. So, and then and I said to my wife Ali, I said, I've just had this idea. We're gonna start this new thing for instrumental lessons, and it's going to be completely free. It's going to be open to all the children in the schools, and we're going to call it Music for the Many. Now, usually when I say something like that to have a harebrained scheme, she like said, maybe we'll make one or two sort of pacifying comments, and then sort of gently tell me that it's really not a very good idea. Have you thought this? But this time, the first time ever, she said, "Yes, that's a really good idea." I said, "What do you think about the name?" and said, "Yeah, it's good," and that was it. So then,
so then backing out.
So then I had to do it then, and so that's how it started. So it's and then you know, then there was, obviously we had to think about how to do it properly. So and looking at all the models, and we decided to set it up as a charity, and then I got a group of trustees who sort of, you know, mentioned the idea to one or two colleagues, you know, to see what they thought, and everyone said, "Oh, that's brilliant, when do we start?" You know, sort of thing. So so yeah, we got a group of trustees together, like you do when you start a charity. To, so it was January 2018. And then
so were these started, musical people, the trustees?
Yeah, it's the sort of people that, local people that I knew had, well, were sort of, you know, competent to to run an organisation with the, you know, the kind of skills that you need. And also people who are, you know, I knew were sympathetic to this, you know, who would be sympathetic to this idea. Because, you know, being a charity trustee can be very thankless, kind of.
Yes.
You know, it can be, you know, not all fun. So,
More pain than gain, personally.
Yeah. That's right,
I've heard lots of people say.
Yeah, it's like being a school governor. It's like...
But if it's a subject that you're passionate about, that must help, you know.
Yeah. Because I think the way that we fund what we do, it's all funded, well, nearly all funded by just private donations. People, you know, donated, you know, we put on fundraising events, and it, which are all sort of, we never sell anything, so the fundraising events are all sort of, you know, pay as you can admission, because that's part of the ethos, is that everything is accessible to everybody. And then we have like people giving us monthly donations, and occasionally someone will get in touch and say, you know, someone's had an inheritance and we want to give you some of it, sort of bigger amounts occasionally, and it's all but most of it is just shaking a bucket at events, you know, and I think that a lot of the way that society functions nowadays is based on shaking buckets at events. That's what has replaced public funding. You know, you don't want to encourage that, because it can endanger perpetuating that as an expectation of how it works. But
It's been in decline. Grants have been in decline for 25 years or more.
Yeah.
I tend to blame Thatcher for everything, but it's not entirely her fault in this case, because nobody's done anything to improve the situation since.
So how does it work then? Do you go out with the money you've raised and buy instruments? Or
no, when we started it, the main issue that was brought up when sort of discussing the idea with other people, well, how are you going to get the instrument? Where are you going to get instruments from? Because that would be expensive. And I said, well, we'll just ask people for instruments. So we did. We did a sort of instrument amnesty, we call it. Mm. So, you know, which a few people have done, you know, there's a few similar schemes around the country. Mm. Like Ronnie Scott's did quite a high profile one last year, where they had, and it's just the idea that a lot of people, as we've discovered, have musical instruments, you know, in their lofts or, you know, tucked away, which maybe their children used to learn on, but no one's played for years. And so we just put a call out and said, if you've got any instruments that you can donate, let us know. And we've never been short of instruments. We've got we've got at the moment about 130 to 140 children learning instruments with us in various places, and they all have an instrument to play, and we've got some instruments in, you know, waiting to go out.
It's fantastic.
It's amazing. I was thinking it's like the, you know, the feeding of the 5,000. This idea, when it's like that sort of the idea that if people think that something's a good idea, you know, that something needs to happen, then it kind of does, because that's, you know, society at its best. That's how Kropotkin would, you know, would say that, I think.
I mean, it's community activism at its best, isn't it?
Yeah.
People think of activism as you save our hospital or whatever it is, stop that road from being built through our park. You know, but it's... Communities are active things. I was thinking, the word community is a verb rather than a noun.
Yeah, that's,
you're not doing it. You're not really part of it.
I mean, that's been. I mean, the big thing that is the most obvious example of that is food banks, isn't it? That's. I mean, which is again something that shouldn't exist. Mm. You know, shouldn't have to exist. And it's this, and it's shown that like. Communities will, you know, if something's needed, you know, people are generally nice.
I mean, absolutely. You know,
that's our default, you know, position.
Yes, people like to sort of sit in the pub or over a coffee and moan about everybody, but then, you know, some kid needs to go to America for an operation and sort of the money's raised in quite poor communities.
Yeah.
It does happen. Yeah. So it's good to hear that of another example of it.
Yeah. Yeah. It is, and it's been really. I mean, the sort of the most of the expense of what we do is fees. Is so we pay because we've got a team which this year's really expanded. We've got like how many we've got now? We've got 9 tutors who work for us. I mean, it's not, you know, full time, but the so most of the expense is paying the tutors because all you know. They're really good professional tutors and very paid. So, so that's always the pressure on the fundraising, really, is to just because it's expensive. I mean, that's why it's become inaccessible, because it is very expensive to provide instrumental tuition.
Yeah. And a lot, I'm going to guess now, you tell me if I'm right or wrong, but my experience is most music teachers are musicians, and part of their income is from gigs.
Yeah.
And part of it is from, you know, teaching in projects like yours.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is, you know, it's a great, I mean, I've worked in education for years.
Yeah.
I found that working with music teachers in a music college was very different from working with psychologists and sociologists in the university because the musicians are musicians. Yeah, yeah. I mean, the people teach about psychology and sociology on the whole. So it's a good example. So give us an example of one of the projects Music for the Many are involved in.
The ongoing, the core work is instrumental lessons, but when we started off, we did it in a very sort of traditional, old-fashioned way, where, you know, we get once a week the child has a, you know, usually 20 minutes or half an hour, and sometimes it's a group of children, sometimes it's individual children, depending on the best way for them to learn. We realised that they were because most of our students don't have other musicians at home and they don't really have any context for their music making. They're not, especially, you know, if we're teaching them to play you know, some classical repertoire, you know, Beethoven symphony or something like that, then it's not something that they will experience in any other place. So then we thought we need to give them a context for that, and so we started teaching children in an orchestra. So we sort of turned it around, rather than having sort of an individual lesson and gradually getting the hang of your instrument and then looking for an orchestra to join, we did it the other way around. We thought, well, everyone will just start off in an orchestra. And from that, we'll have a look and think, what do you need to learn? And then we'll, so the children are all there together. And then we have a look. This child needs to work on their, you know, phrasing, or this child needs to work on the intonation in this passage of music, or that kind of thing. And so then we sort of do that in that targeted way, which is a more sort of efficient way we found of teaching. But that's the big thing.
And probably has more relevance to the kids as well. They were playing the instruments, if they can hear it among other
things
and with contact, let's say.
Because it's really important to us that they're learning social skills, and that they're learning that music is about community, and that idea that you know that other people are dependent on you to do your job, because then that makes their thing work, and you know that's that idea of music, so which is good, and it sort of motivates everyone more.
And music's normally a group thing, whether it's sort of like a rock trio with sort of drums, bass and guitar, or it's a full orchestra.
Yeah, exactly.
It's always the thing to be done with other people.
Yeah.
And yet the way they learn it. I mean, I might have carried on with piano lessons if it hadn't just been me and my piano teacher once a week, you know. If there'd been other people involved with other instruments, I don't know.
That's my first instrument, is piano, and it's it's quite a solitary thing to do, isn't it?
Yeah,
because you're like, it's generally a solo instrument.
But you are involved in a few bands, groups. The Daniel Bath Trio.
The Daniel Bath Trio. Yeah, which it's funny that it feels weird having a Belaine in something which has got your name in the title. It feels a bit.
It's a very jazz thing to do.
I know. It's
Dave Brubeck Five. Yeah. Daniel Bath Trio.
Yeah. That's why it's. I play piano in Sentimentalists, which has been going for years and years with my very good friend Pip Fowler. Another top modern person who's incidentally is the chair of our trustees as well.
I believe so.
I
know Pip quite well.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, he's Mr. Todmorden. he's brilliant, and he's a fantastic songwriter. Actually, I was with. That's the pleasure of playing in that band. Actually, it's just the songs, and every now and again we'll come up with a new song, and I think, oh, that's amazing. You know, and it gets to the point where you sort of listen to other songs. They say, "Oh, that's quite a good song," but it's not as good as Pip songs.
It's no Pip Fowler.
But it's he's very, and it's funny and clever, but not in a forced way, and very, so a lot of it's very, very profound. The words of his songs, and it's great. So I've been doing that for a long time with sort of occasional glimmers of success, whatever that looks like.
Yes. So what are these glimmers of success? You've intrigued me now.
Well, no, we've done a few things. Well, like they put us on the stage at Glastonbury a few years ago. Well, a long time, was it 10 years ago now, I think. We made a nice album a while ago. We've played we did a support spot for The Fall in London once.
Fantastic.
That was good fun. It's great. I mean, we played some lovely, we did a fantastic gig a few months ago at the Rosemount Working Men's Club in the Stacksteads, which was, that was an amazing gig, actually. That was really fascinating. such a funny place. It was great. It was really, we're always doing things now and again.
Good. And we're playing your trio.
Well, the jazz trio, we play very occasionally. To be honest, I mean, most of the time I'm too busy doing music for the many to write funding applications and stuff to do very much. So I don't really promote it, you know, to try and get gigs. But occasionally someone asks us, to play
So what instruments do the others play?
Piano, drums and bass. So they've got a drummer. He's a great drummer from... He's the same drummer that plays in Sentimentalist, actually, John Shepherd from Leeds. He's a fantastic drummer. And then bass player called Adam Medlock, who's originally, I know, was a teacher. I used to teach with him. He's a good, great bass player. Yeah.
And talking about teaching, your face got well known on television with Lucy Illingworth.
Yeah, well, I teach. Lucy, I've known her for ages.
From there, Daniel went on to talk about the amazing Lucy Illingworth, who won Channel 4's TV programme The Piano. 14-year-old Lucy is just amazing, has been playing piano for about 10 years. As Lucy is very much worth an episode in herself, I'll chat with Daniel about her and we'll form part two, which will follow shortly. In the meantime, let's just have a brief listen to the Daniel Bath Trio.